1 Corinthians, Paul says, "For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. According to the grace of God which was given to me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds upon it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." In this podcast, we explore those who went the wrong way. We examine how it happened, why it happened, and who it happened to. But most importantly, we always ask the question, could it happen to us?
Well, howdy, folks. We back for episode number 3. I'm talking about the Westboro Baptist Church here tonight. Brian, how y'all doing over in there?
Oh, man, we're making it one day at a time.
One day at a time, sweet Jesus.
Getting the kids to and from school. That's the big thing right now.
To and from school. You know, I heard if you just tie one of the little apple trackers around their foot and let them loose, they'll get there eventually.
Right. Yeah, one of them's going to start riding his bike now that it's starting to cool off, so that'll help.
You going to put an apple tracker on his bike?
We'll come up with something.
Oh, yeah, you don't have no Apple devices.
That's right.
How do you live in this world without the good stuff?
Pretty well.
It's kind of like going through life and buying the off-brand Velveeta.
I was going to say, I have money to buy the real Velveeta because I'm not buying the Apple stuff.
Well, I have a half a block of real Velveeta in there because I have a strict rule in my house. We do not buy off-brand Velveeta. We either have the real Velveeta or we go without.
Or not at all.
Yep. They're, don't get me wrong. I buy off-brand all kinds of stuff. I shop it to Goodwill. And I'm okay with this. Don't tell my wife. I'm even okay with dumpster diving. If there's something good in there, I could sell it to make a profit. Hey. But she don't like that so much.
Yeah, I bet.
But, you know, speaking of that, let's talk about them Westboro folks.
Yeah, they... Yeah, it's...
I was thinking dumpster fire, so Westboro, kind of all goes together.
Yep, I agree. After last week's episode, I don't know where else we can go from here, so I'm hoping that you've got some interesting little tidbits that we can jump on. And
interesting little tidbits.
Yeah.
Well... Well, we want to wrap up with this because we've covered a whole bunch. We went through their history. We went through, what they believed. We talked about the picketing because you can't talk about Westboro without talking about the picketing. Talked a little bit about the family dynamics and about how, you know, from some perspectives, they had a really good family. But from other perspectives, there was some stuff seriously, seriously wrong, you know? There seems to be a culture of shame. Which is kind of a common thing in cults, right? A culture of shame. Think about this. If we go back, now everybody knows this podcast knows that you and I are practicing Christians, right?
Right.
So we believe in the Bible and in the creation story in the Bible. It's Adam and Eve. And, Eve ate from the tree. And then right after that, you know, after they defied what God had told them, Adam and Eve experienced shame. Shame was really, I won't say it was the first sin. It wasn't the first sin. It's the first consequence of the sin, right? That feeling of shame. Shame can be used to manipulate people. And... they used shame to manipulate their children, to manipulate each other. And they were trying really hard to use shame to manipulate outsiders, to make them feel ashamed of different things, right?
Okay.
You don't think so?
I want to hear the rest of where you're going, because I don't see it as shame as much as I do guilt. And there's a little bit of a difference between those two.
How would you define that difference?
I should have known that you were going to ask me that. shame comes from the outside, right? The the difference in a legal and guilt society versus an honor and shame society, right? You don't do something that will bring shame on your family, right? The external source there. Whereas guilt is built into you as an internal source, something that you feel for yourself. And it seems to me that these guys were spending more time trying to tell us, right, that we're guilty and therefore we should feel something. So,
well, that's shame according to your definition, right?
It's kind of a little bit of both.
Yeah,
they were trying to use shame to induce guilt, I guess, is probably what they're trying to
that
do.
Makes sense. And they did this with each other too. So again, referencing back to that book by the Megan Phelps Roper, that which is her maiden name, by the way. That's her parents' name is Phelps Roper. Which is interesting because her mom was a Phelps, and I guess that means her dad was a Roper, and so they combined the name like that. It was so important that really, well, I'll get to that in just a second, but the shame thing. So she mentioned so many times being guided by the fear that she would go to hell if she did this or did that. And then when she didn't have that fear, there goes that shame and guilt thing you was talking about. It was told to her. You know,
right,
that she should have it. She was taught from a young age about the submission to her elders and the submission to the others in the church. She was taught from a young age that God was out to get people, basically, you know. But the other thing I was going to bring up was she talks about her father being pretty mild, which is interesting because they're a very... the man runs the house, the man's the head of the everything type group.
Yeah.
And yet her father was very, very meek and mild in comparison. Her mom really kind of ran things. And you see a lot of the interviews and stuff. Like I said, her mom really did that. It was Shirley Phelps Roper. But her grandmother was not super the one to stand up, be in front of everybody. Although you see her, everybody in the family, everybody was at the picket lines. And then you see her cousin, JL, on there talk about she's the one who married the guy from England who watched the documentary and decided he wanted to join.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
You see this guy in the documentary, and I've read some of the comments people said about him. He is every much the definition of a very passive, non-aggressive, you know, he is not the head of his household. Even though they're trying real hard to make it appear so, you know?
I was going to say, so does that mean you're fixing to use the big H word again?
Well, yes. Because we discussed that yesterday, the last episode.
Yeah, last week.
With that they seem to preach one thing and do another so often.
Yeah.
So while they preach that the men were the head of all this stuff, the truth is, several of the daughters ran the church for the most part for a long time. They towed the line quite a ways. Well, wait, the daughters are the ones who ran the law firm. You know?
Okay, yeah.
Shirley Phelps Roper and...
yeah.
I think it's Maggie. I don't remember the name of the other one. The other sister, they really ran things for a long time. Now, this outsider guy who joined, the drain guy, he's one of the head leaders now. One of Shirley's kids is one of the elders now. The elders are all men now. And before that, you know, the grandfather was the guy. But when he was in charge, effectively his daughters were in charge for a lot of stuff. They did a lot of things and were in charge of a lot of things and made a lot of decisions. Even though they kind of preached the opposite direction of that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because they, I'm assuming that they're still, you know, I know they, and you may be wanting to get to this, their modesty code, where the women have to wear head coverings.
Yes. Well, that's part of that picking out scripture you was talking about.
Uh-huh.
So it appears they still do that, and they did that the whole time. But the modesty thing, I think I mentioned this before, they used to not be a real big into modesty. I mean, they, you know, you see them on videos where the girls are wearing tank tops and things like that. Nothing like, you know, by our standards, bad.
Right.
You know, shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
Regular shorts. I'm not talking about booty shorts or something. But
right, yeah, they were wearing normal stuff. Right.
One of the things that helped, you know, the Megan Phelps Roper to leave was when the elders took over. They started enacting modesty stuff, where they were very, very strict. One of the girls who left had went on vacation, had wore a bikini, and when she came back, somebody had found out she wore a bikini, and so they started to ostracize her for that. And so that's one of the reasons she left. You know,
mm-hmm.
So that did change with some of that, but anyways, that's just some of the weird things about them. They don't seem to be consistent, which is interesting. As hardcore as they are, they're so inconsistent about things, you know.
Right.
And as you mentioned, they still live on, but they don't really accept much outsiders. They've had a few outsiders come over the years. And an outsider is kind of running the group now, but he's lost his whole family, so it's not like his family's going to be taken over. His wife is still there, but his children are not anymore. Can you imagine your dad just coming home one day and saying, "Hey, I've been studying and doing a documentary on this cult, but I think I like what they had to say. Let's move to Topeka, Kansas."
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah,
especially if your daddy was a hippie filmmaker and moves to some group like this in Kansas, and all of a sudden wants your family by these rules now.
Yeah, go from, you know, total free love, happy, go lucky, everything is cool, to teaching the complete opposite.
Chief sign maker too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that little tidbit. He is the chief sign maker. And I told you the signs changed. He was not the original sign maker, but he's been the chief sign maker since they were quite much more harsh. He's been the chief sign maker the whole time. They actually have a room at the church where they make signs.
who's gonna print them for them? So
right. Well, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. One of the documentary guys that I watched, he did three different documentary things on them. And by the second and third one, they made signs with his face saying that he was going to hell directly.
God.
They did their very best to try to antagonize him. He tried to interview Fred Phelps, and Fred Phelps told him, he asked Fred Phelps, "How many kids does he have?" And Fred Phelps told him that's a stupid question, that he should have been better prepared for the interview, and they wouldn't do the interview anymore. But he argued that it was not a stupid question because Fred Phelps had lots of kids, but several had left, and he wanted to know if he would answer 7, 9, or 13.
It's a reasonable question to ask.
Would he acknowledge the kids he had that were gone?
Right. Yeah, if you know the answer to the question biologically, right, but you want to know his answer in the moment, that's a totally valid question to ask.
Right, but they just use it as an excuse not to interview. They're like, which is weird because they're normally pretty open interviews, but Fred Phelps himself was not. He was just so hateful. But anyways.
Really?
Let's discuss, we wanted to go over tonight, one of the things we wanted to go over was the criteria of if they're a cult. Now, we've talked about this twice now, about what our list is for what is a cult, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to start us off on that part? What do we think, if they're a cult or not?
Yeah, since we're talking about the social issues tonight, let's start with the social criteria. Sound like a plan?
Okay.
Okay. So from our list back at episode 4, episode 5? That we narrowed down. We list centralized authority, a we versus they mentality.
Well, let's go through each one. So centralized authority.
Okay. Yep.
So they do have a centralized authority in the beginning with Fred Phelps himself. Everything pretty much came from him.
Okay.
And then as later when he passed away and stuff, now it's centered upon the elders of the church. But they don't answer to any other source. They're not accountable to anybody else or any other group or body or gathering or anything. It's just them.
Mm-hmm.
So I would give them one big red star for that.
Oh, we're doing red stars.
Well,
love it.
Cults and communists, you know, not that far yeah. apart.
True. I don't know. I think when Fred was alive, even like you said, his daughters ran so much. Yeah, it's centralized around his family. You know, I think most people, when they think of a central authority in a cult, they think of that one person, like Jim Jones or Tony Alamo. In this case, I mean, it was centered around the family. I think it's probably kind of started to break up with Phelps's death.
More and more people seem to be leaving. Kind of took over.
Right. Which is generally a sign that the group no longer gives authority to those that are trying to lead. Right, because you have to give someone authority.
Well, and you know, that's right? Interesting you say that, because that Megan Phelps Roper... Some people who have been somewhat critical of her story are like, well, would she have ever left if things weren't changing? You know, her grandfather was losing power at that time, and the elders had taken control of the church, and they were changing things. Mm-hmm. Her mother had quite a bit of power in the church, and while she disagreed with her mother on some things, she was very proud, and she very much admits this, to be her mother's right-hand person. You know, she was super proud right. that in their house she had a desk right next to her mother's to help her mother with media stuff and things, you know. Mm-hmm. But all that changed, and whenever they started disciplining her mother and took her out of power of stuff, because her mom was one of the harshest ones, and they said she was too harsh. If Westboro says you're too harsh, you must be harsh.
Right.
And ironically, one of the things they charged her mother with was that she wasn't loving with other church members. And, but she was very proud of that. So, but things were changing, you know, the power was shifting a little bit, or a lot of bit actually.
Right.
And that's when the more modesty things came in. The other thing is, there was a time that she says that when the church was going to do something, that they would all vote, they would all get together and everybody would have to agree. But whenever mm-hmm. the elders came into power, when all of a sudden they got these elders in place, they were not even allowed, if they had a disagreement or they questioned about something, they were not allowed to say it in church at all. They had to go to their elder who over their section. And hers was her right. dad or her brother. It was her dad, but her dad was sometimes being disciplined too, so she had to go to her brother. Her brother kind of outranked her dad, which is interesting, in the elder group.
Yeah.
And so she had to go to him for things. So that was the other thing, is if she had any issue with anything or any questions about anything, and that was hard to do because generally it was considered sin, but they made it even worse that, you know, as a female, she had absolutely no power at that point, when before she had a little bit of power.
Right.
So things changed, and I think maybe it changed. Ironically, it was a centralized authority with the grandfather, and then kind of it was, like you mentioned, some of the daughters were doing some stuff, but with the elders, it became more centralized than just a few men.
Yeah. So I think you're right to give them a big red star. Okay, so this one, I think, is
wait.
Is plainly...
Instead of red star, should we give big red glasses of Kool-Aid?
Ah, there we go.
There's a cult one. Cult reference.
But wasn't it grape?
It was grape, and it was Flavor Aid. The Kool-Aid Corporation would like us to mention it was Flavor Aid.
That's right.
But people think of Kool-Aid, they think red, because that's the best.
Yeah, true. Yep.
Man, I want some. I'm going to get some red Kool-Aid tomorrow.
Okay. So our next one on social is, I mean, I don't think that there's any question that they get their big red glass of Kool-Aid on this one. Their we versus they mentality.
Ooh, yeah. They're very we versus they. They're probably the epitome of we versus they.
Yep.
Whenever you condemn everybody else in the world is going to hell and is hated by God.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, even more so than Jim Jones. I mean, Jones had his paranoia, but...
But he thought there were allies out there in the world. He was pretty happy with the Soviet Union.
Yep. Yeah, these guys would just soon say their little group of 33 people are the only ones in the world that are actual Christians.
Yeah, they absolutely believe that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that one's a... That's a cup of Kool-Aid. I like that. We're gonna use that one. Isolationist and exclusivist. I don't think they really fit. I mean, they fit the exclusivist, but not the isolationist.
Yeah, not really. They're accused of that because of the whole shared backyard, and they own several of their homes, but not all their homes are on that same block. But not all the houses are. Some were across the street, etc., and on down a little bit, and blah, blah, and this and that. But no, like I mentioned before, they were participating in culture. They went to school. They admit they didn't have any friends, but that's because they protested at school. Nobody wanted to be their friend, but they were out in the world. They had jobs, and you know, you had to have at least some acquaintances and jobs, surely.
Right. Yeah, so they didn't run and
Oh, and I mentioned about them being lawyers. There were some that were lawyers, but out of the grandkids, there were some who became nurses.
Oh. Interesting.
Very.
That's a...
Right, it seems like an incompatible profession, doesn't it? You know, lawyers, you think of a slimy lawyer. Excuse me to my lawyer friends.
Right.
Some of you are pretty awesome, but some lawyers are slimy. But lawyers, you think that, but you don't think that with nurses, you know, or at least you don't want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, IT people, some psychopaths.
Yeah, most of us are. Yeah.
Church IT people, masochists.
Yep.
However you say that word.
Masochist.
There you go. That's church IT people right there. Yep. So y'all listeners know I'm describing Brian and I.
Yep. Now they are pretty exclusivist. Obviously with their we versus they mentality, but they don't exactly just let you come in and be a part of their group.
So interesting. In the second or third documentary from that Louis Theroux guy, by the way, he's the My Money Don't Jiggle, It Folds. Okay. That guy, he's the one who did documentaries on him.
Oh,
yeah, My Money Don't Jiggle, It Folds. That guy,
oh, God.
And so you know what I'm talking about. It's a cultural reference, by the way, that Brian actually gets, but nobody will get in a year from now because that horrible thing will finally go away.
Hopefully,
where was I going with this? Oh, people who want to join. So he's at one of their church services and he's sitting there and he's being pretty respectful to the service. Now, he's an avowed atheist. He don't believe any of this, but he's not there to disrupt the service or anything. He's just there to observe and maybe ask some questions later if they let him. And they generally do. They're generally nice to him, but sometimes they say horrible things, I think, to try to get the camera to watch them. Like, don't you know you're going to burn in hell forever? But he interviews a guy in the back who he asks him, this guy appears to be an immigrant from a foreign country. He's there visiting and he's by himself. Nobody's really associating with him much, but they do all know his name. And he says that he's been visiting for a while. And he says, are you a member of the church? He says, no, but I want to be. And, then he asks them, he's like, well, what do you have to do to become a member of the church? And he's like, well, I've got to start living right. And I'm not living right yet. And one of them says, you have to repent from your sins. And then, you know, we might consider you to be worthy or something like that. They didn't say consider you to be worthy, but they did say repent from your sins. was very vague about how do you join the church, which to right. me, having yeah. grown up in Southern Baptist Church, which is not the same theology as these people.
No.
We would enthusiastically be speaking to somebody who wanted to join our church, and we would make it very clear and obvious. This is XYZ, how you join our church. And that sort of thing. But they really weren't all that interested in it. They allow visitors. Like I said, you and I can go to church service. But mm-hmm. they're not going to make you want to stay there. They're not going to be welcoming. They're not going right. to take your kids into children's church and feed you a meal.
Yeah.
They're not going to give away a free book with a free gift for all guests, you know. Like a lot of mm-hmm. our modern churches. I'm guessing your church don't give away free books right. for all guests, though.
I mean, there's books back there.
I mean, do y'all text a code yep. and then they get a free book or something?
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know how some churches no, you do. Just,
yeah, no, you have to come by and just pick it up off the table
oh.
and go on.
Oh, but they are giving out books, like, that's interesting.
Yeah, like actual, yeah. Hmm. We also have a bookstore.
I like church bookstores, so, but anyways.
I do too, most of the time. Really, number four, elitism, kind of ties in with the exclusivist. I think I'm going to rearrange those. Number five, proselytism. This will kind of tie into some of the theological criteria. They don't spend a lot of time trying to help other people follow Christ.
Right.
And quote, be saved.
Right.
They spend a lot of time telling you you're not one of us, so therefore you're going to hell.
Well, and
because you're not one of the chosen.
They believe that if you're going to be saved, you're going to be saved. That's that whole tulip thing, is the hyper-Calvinism mm-hmm. thing. So they don't see any point yep. in it. Now, they were asked, you know, why don't you do some good works? Why don't you out there feeding people or helping the homeless or anything like that? And they're like, well, we do some things like that, but we don't believe that that's service to God. What God calls us to do is to tell people the truth. And so our service is to tell people the truth.
Matthew chapter 25.
I mean,
says the exact opposite of that.
Are you just,
again,
are you just proof texting there, buddy?
Yep. I guess. I am using the entire chapter, but yes.
Oh, the chapter numbers that were made up. Okay.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just making sure. But, you know, I absolutely agree with you. We are very much called to help other people. If anything, that is what we are called to do.
Yep. Even James. James said the same thing.
They just think that they're helping people is by telling people that they're going to hell.
Right. So, you know, when we think of proselytism, we think of going out and trying to get people to follow your group. And obviously they're not really doing that.
No, they don't really.
They are public.
They've had some people join, but they don't ask anybody to join.
Right. So I don't think they can get their star for that.
Okay. No red glass of Kool-Aid.
No Kool-Aid. Yep.
All right. What about your number six here?
Are they outside of the cultural norm?
Yep. Normal people don't tell parents they're happy their children died.
Right.
Normal people don't protest outside funerals of dead soldiers. Look, I love my country. I very much love our military and respect the sacrifices they have done for us. On the other hand, everybody who knows me knows I'm not Mr. Nationalist country first. I am Jesus right. first and country second. Okay. As much as I love our country and I feel very blessed that we were born here. I try to say all those things so people don't call me a liberal again. But
right.
whatever. However, this is way so far out of cultural norms. They take cultural yeah. norms and exploit them to create chaos. And the author yep. of chaos is the devil.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So big red glass of Kool-Aid for that one.
Hey, look, I proof text right there too.
Yep. Well, I mean, it's hard not to.
Right. You got me thinking about it.
Yeah. When it's the right text for the situation.
Well, that's what they believe too. They think they're saying the right text for the situation.
Yeah, but
keep reading.
Yeah.
Keep reading.
Are they labeled a cult by the outside?
Absolutely. And that's because, especially by other religious folks, more so by other religious folks than by non-religious folks. Because the other religious folks, especially the Christian groups, don't want anybody thinking this is a Christian group. They don't want anybody thinking this is
right
the thing, you know? Like I mentioned before,
yeah,
you know, they're a Westboro Baptist church, but every single other Baptist church in the country would like you to know that they are not the same sort of Baptist church, right?
Right.
But that's true of every other church in the country, too. They may vehemently disagree with each other, but they all disagree with Westboro.
Yep.
So, yes, I think they are labeled a cult by others. And by the Southern Poverty Law Center, what is that? As much as you do or don't want to believe them.
Right. What is that? Six out of seven cups of Kool-Aid?
Six out of seven cups of Kool-Aid. Add you a little cyanide in there, and you're done for.
I think they are well on their way to being considered a cult by us.
Yo, my wife just walked through here. Hear me spew all that. I don't know what she thinks about me. But look, we already married now. She already stuck with me, so.
That's right. Yep.
She should have researched that
so
a little bit.
So any other... Right. Any other social thoughts that you've had while we've been going through these before we move into the theological criteria?
No, I think we've covered it pretty well. I will say this. Family ties are hard to break. And when you do break mm-hmm. them, it destroys a part of you. The people who have left the group have all had to give up parts of themselves to leave this group. That Megan Phelps Roper talks about her family and how much, for a lot of ways, she was treated well as a kid. Some ways she was mistreated, but a lot of ways she was treated well. And what she gave up when she left the group was the birthday parties with the cousins, the playing with her siblings and her cousins, the aunts, the uncles, the support and love of your family. They all told her she was special all the time. They told her how much they loved her all the time. And she had to give all that up to leave this group. So, you know, we talk often about, you know, could this sort of thing happen to us? I mean, she grew up in it. She had no choice but to be there. It's not like she went and joined it, right? And I think that possibly some of the people who have joined it have seen that part. And they thought, I want something like that. I want a family. And when you are part of their group, as long as you're following your T's and dotting your I's, they very much treat each other like family, and they'll do anything for each other. They don't live in a commune, mm-hmm. but they mentioned about, you know, one of the pivoting things she had was her and her sister were painting a basement at one of her aunts and uncle's houses because it needed done, and they were pitching in to get things done, and that's what family does, is they help each other.
You know?
So it creates an environment like that. So that's the only other point I would bring up about social stuff.
Cool. Well, let's recap the theology and then decide, is Westboro Baptist Church a cult? First theological point is a misplaced authority. And this one, I don't know if you went and read my notes. This one was kind of hard, right? Because While Phelps was kind of the authority, he looked to a higher authority.
This is true. He didn't.
Right. He looked.
He didn't say that he was the authority of everything.
Right. They took a strong, strong emphasis on the literal words of the Bible. And they took such a strong point in that literalness that they miss so much of what's actually being said, right? You know, we talked about that with proof texting, right? You miss out on context and depth that's there. And given their placement of their authority in the literal King James Version text of the Bible, I would say that that is a misplaced authority.
Why is it a misplaced authority? You kind of said it, but I want you to be very clear, because it sounds like that you're coming to the conclusion they misplaced their authority because they put their authority in the Bible, but that's not what you're saying. You're saying it's because they put their authority in only a few scriptures and ignored
in,
so much
in a
else.
Very small subset of the Bible.
Yes.
Right? They say that they're Bible believing, but really they're only some of the Bible believing.
Not that we disagree right? with their interpretations as much as they very obviously are not looking at everything.
I mean, there's a lot of their interpretations that I disagree with. But
well, I'm not saying you don't disagree, but I'm saying that's not your issue, is that you just disagree. It's that it's obviously missing some things.
Right. Yeah, they're not taking the entirety of the story of Christianity into context. And so that's misplaced. Right? They're placing it in the pieces rather than the whole, rather than in the Word, which is Jesus. Their second one, eschatological error. Oh, do they get a Kool-Aid for misplaced authority?
Yes, one large Kool-Aid.
Yes.
It's kind of thick. Okay. It looks like blood. Lots of sugar.
I'm going to have to get on Fiverr and get us a little icon made so we can stick next to different things.
Yeah.
Second one, eschatological error. So errors about the end times. What do you think? I know what I think, but I want to get your thoughts after we talked last week on their eschatology.
I think it's the same thing. They put themselves as the center and the stars, that everything, they think the whole end times is pretty much about them. Ironic, they profess to be waiting for Jesus, but really they make their whole story about the end times about them and what's going to happen to them and what they're going to do. I think they're quite in error on that. And they're pretty happy to see that people are going to burn in hell. They're pretty happy about this.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of the kicker that I was focused on, is the fact that they're glad to see people who don't make it.
And they justify this. They're like, you know, that's not such a bad thing, because that's what they think, that's what God's glad about. So they're just doing what God wants them to do. And that's
right.
Out of fear, and it's very much out of fear, they're going along with it. So they think God believes this thing, and so they are going to believe the same thing, and it's completely out of fear, because they don't want to go against the wrath of God either. None of them are assured of their own salvation. They're assured of the group, but none of their individual salvation, which I find very interesting. When they are questioned about it, none of them are assured of their own. They hope they go to heaven.
Yeah. So this one, I would give them like a half a cup of Kool-Aid.
What?
Because the things that they're teaching aren't necessarily wrong, right? They're publications. I know that you found some things about them leading the 144,000, and that part is wrong. But a lot of their publications are centered around the return of Christ, which is going to happen. But your point that you were making leads right into the next one, soteriological error, which for people who aren't me, that's errors around salvation, right? Around their theology of salvation. And I don't want to spend a whole episode going into Calvin, but Calvinism, especially hyper-Calvinism, does not align well with Nicene Christianity, right? Excuse me. And so there's not anything to go off of on how to be saved, right? It's just a lot of God will save you if he wants to. And so I would give them a full glass of Kool-Aid here.
I agree. They're completely off about that. They're hyper-Calvinist. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I know there are people who are Calvinist who don't believe the same way these people believe. There's a lot ambiguity in the definitions of what is Calvinist and what isn't Calvinist, especially among people who argue about such things. But I don't think it's ambiguous to say they're hyper-Calvinist, and most people don't agree with hyper-Calvinism.
Yep. Number four, a modification of vocabulary. Ooh, I'm going to cough. One sec.
Well, the vocabulary modification happens somewhat. I mean, they speak American English and everything, but you often see them... well, actually, that's one of your points there, so I don't want to take your point away from you, but... Mm-hmm. I'll let you.
No, that's why we write them in notes.
But that's part of the deal is that you often see them, you know, say things different ways. And I'll let you explain that, why they say things differently.
Yeah, a big part of what they're doing, and one of the reasons that I don't want to say I'm opposed to the King James Bible, but I think you need to take the King James Bible for what it is. A translation that happened 400 years ago, right? A lot of things with the English language have changed in 400 years. There are words that are used in the King James Bible that don't mean the same thing as the same word today. So you have to be very, very careful using the King James. Because you wind up putting yourself into heresy, right? If you take the modern meaning of the word...
The big H word, heresy.
And apply it literally, yep. Which is what they do. They apply it all literally. So you have to be very, very careful. The other part arises from their very strict literalist reading.
Well, and they're not just literal, because they're also picking and choosing. So it's not just literally... I just want to emphasize that, because there are some denominations that are pretty literal, and I'm not going to be the one who's going to say they're completely wrong, because I am somebody who believes in the truth of the Bible, that, you know, the Bible tells itself the truth. If you study it enough, it all does go together and make sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's because of that picking and choosing thing they do. And they just go to the extremes with one little word. And then if you were to really look at the word, it might be quite different.
Yep. Yep. And it's, you know, I specifically choose the word, you know me, and I'm very picky on semantics, you know, and you and I joke about my semantic choices all the time. But the reason that I choose the word literalist rather than literal, right, is that it's a very wooden, this word means this, and therefore this text means this. Whereas literal is taking it within its context and within its literature type of context, right? So text that's in a gospel has a different meaning than text that's in a poem, right? It's intended to be taken in two different ways. Whereas Westboro takes both of those for their literalist meaning, which winds up with all sorts of problems.
So we're saying they do modify vocabulary.
Absolutely.
More Kool-Aid.
Big red Kool-Aid. And finally, mistaught concepts.
Yeah. They wrong, y'all. They're just wrong. Nobody else agrees they're right. They're just wrong.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of just an obvious one. You know, we talked about it in the theology issues. We talked about it in social issues just a moment ago. They just take something and twist it. And it's just... so far removed from reality. I can't even say that it's heresy. It's just because it's not just twisted truth. It's flat out wrong.
Yeah, a lot of their stuff has no bearing in truth whatsoever, and so that makes it even more so. And it's such harmful stuff to people's individuals and hurts their feelings, and it becomes very explosive, reactionary stuff. And so it's, you know, y'all see, we want to make a big effort to work in condemning what they say here, right? We would never believe such a thing. And that's going to be the true with a lot of cults that we cover, right? So I think that definitely qualifies for a big glass of red Kool-Aid right there.
Yep. I was going to say, you know, speaking of condemning what they're teaching, I will go on record, right, going so far as to say that what they teach is evil, and that those who teach such a thing cannot be considered Christian by any measure.
But what you're not saying is that they can never be a Christian.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, right. They can repent and they can be Christians.
Which is the difference between our beliefs and Westboro's beliefs, because Westboro believes that you can't.
Right.
So we may disagree on what the sin is here, but we believe that even in the deepest, darkest, most horrific sin, the power of the Spirit can overcome and you can be saved.
Absolutely.
But they teach completely differently.
Right. So that concludes Westboro, Matt. What do you think? Are they a cult?
They are absolutely, positively a cult.
I think so. I think you're right. When we started talking about Westboro, right? I was like, I don't know that they really fit our cult definition. I mean, I know that they're wrong and they have all sorts of problems, but, you know, looking at our criteria, they do. They fit as a cult.
I was surprised in studying them to find out how close their family was. I was expecting a lot more stereotypical things that I didn't find. You know, old Tony Lamo, multiple wives, that sort of thing.
Right.
So far, the cult leaders we've done have done stuff like that, and I've not seen any of that. And I was surprised to not find that. And I was surprised to find as much information as I did about these people, that they were so open to talking. Yeah. A lot of other cults are not open and don't want to talk, but these people talk. They do interviews.
Yeah, they like to
hear. We very well could have asked somebody to come on for an interview, but honestly, I don't want to talk to them.
Right. Yeah. We talked last week about, you know, it would be hard. It would be hard to stand in front of them and talk and not get angry.
Yeah. For sure. Well, all right. I guess that wraps us up then for Westboro and for this episode. Any final words there, Brian?
I think my last word previously, you know, that if you teach these things, you're not a Christian. Stands pretty firm. So join us next month as we're going to take the whole month and find a group that fits the theme of Halloween, right? Because it'll be October, it'll be perfect leading up to it, and then we're going to bring you guys a special episode for Halloween itself. Join us in October. We'll see you then. Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Don't forget that we have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where we post a more detailed blog with references so that you can go and take a look at all of this information for yourself. Also, remember to share this with a friend and help us get the word out there for everyone else. We'll see you in the next one.